So thank you so much for coming, and for those who've been meditating throughout the evening, the hard part is over. There's a famous French psychoanalyst who was interviewed about how in his with many of his sessions he wouldn't say anything for the first 5 to 10 sessions with his patients. He just would have them sit on the couch facing the other direction and sit and not say anything and let them basically talk and ramble and free associate. And he was asked, why did he do this? Why didn't he ask any questions? And he said, well, it's amazing how when people are forced to free associate and ramble and talk and they really listen to themselves, they realize how crazy they are without me having to do anything. And I have to tell you that more often than not, on the many, many retreats I've gone to, there's those times where you have the really intense blissed out, almost, well, I've had the really intense blissed out, almost psychedelic experiences. But just as often, there'll be times where I'm thinking to myself, holy shit, I am totally fucking insane. I am totally fucking crazy. Like, I'll just stop, and in the middle of, like, after I've allowed my, you know, just I've not distracted myself with the world for a little while just to see where my mind goes. And it's like, whoa, really, the only thing that's keeping me even remotely at times in my life, like, from noticing just how crazy my mind is by nature, is just the fact that there's so many things externally that I have around to distract myself. And that's the nature of, I think, the game. It's only when we're going through real crises in life, nervous breakdowns, you know, black periods where we can't distract ourselves anymore with television, movies, internet, emails, social dramas, whatever it is that we use to distract ourselves, that we're in that place where we see, oh my God, like this thing I have that's supposed to figure out life for me, it's supposed to help me navigate through life, my tool or this mind, when I don't train it, when I don't pay attention to it, it is completely nuts. Completely nuts. And so even if during a meditation, and I'm going to leave time for you guys to share about things that you experienced during the meditation and any other thoughts you have, but just having that experience of, even if you don't have a blissed out state, even if you sit and you don't have that transportive experience, a transcendent experience where you realize, oh my God, all this stuff I'm caring about, it's nonsense, there's peace within. Even if you don't have that and you really see, like, just how crazy and how bizarre and how self-destructive our thinking can be, that in itself is extremely valuable, because most of the time we're listening to those thoughts as if they're our best friends, you know, as if there's somebody who really cares about us, as if that voice in our head is really, really, really giving us important information that will help us. Now, sometimes it is. Sometimes it is. In fact, maybe even the majority of the time, the thoughts that our brain says, like, don't cross the street, it's a red light, there's cars coming. And so we begin to think, well, that was a pretty good thought. The thought that that woke me up and got me to work, that was a pretty good thought. And I had a nice thought the other day that seemed pretty intelligent. People at work really liked it. I had another thought that my friends thought, I said something very funny the other day, and my friends were just really caught up by, I think, how insightful I am. So really, I can trust what's going on in here because I've got some evidence that it doesn't work that way. It's a, as we use the phrase, it's like a committee. A lot of the times we're listening to good, sane committee voices, but there are some members of the committee. And they will come out when you sit for a while. And they will, like, whisper, and they, the thing about them is they use the exact same sounding voice as the sane voices. That's the problem. If they had a different voice, right, a different accent, if, like, if Senior Loco, you know, in our heads had an accent, you're like, oh, okay, I've seen your Loco. It's nice, you know, I know what you're going to tell me to, like, isolate, not call up anybody, you know, deal with all my problems on my own, not ask for higher advice from wise people. You're going to do that, blah, blah, blah. I know it's you, so I'm not going to listen. But it's the exact same voice that tells us, the exact same sounding voice that tells us to do reasonable things. So it's a very tricky situation. In general, the core of the Buddhist teachings is that the bulk of our suffering is not caused by the world, but it's actually caused by the way we relate to what happens to us in life, in the world. It's the way we shape our experience, the way we react to what's going on that causes us the bulk of our suffering. The Buddha said we're shot with one arrow by the world, by the inevitabilities of people doing things we don't like, by growing old, and by getting sick, and by not getting the things we want. But then there's the way we react. We try to control people to try to get what we want. We try to attach our sense of security to things that are not predictable, that are not sustainable. We try to get a sense of identity from jobs and relationships and from drugs and habits and things like that that don't give us any sense of real lasting peace or security or identity. They're just things that we have to put effort and effort and effort into getting more and more and more of, and they work less and less and less, and eventually they don't work at all. But there are luckily ways and things that can bring us lasting peace. The Buddha didn't just say, as he's occasionally reported, people just say the first noble truth, which is in life there's suffering. And that's sometimes the only truth that people learn of the Buddha, and they're like, well, that's pretty fucking depressing. The guy was sort of a bummer. You know, I mean, sure, yeah, there is a lot of suffering in life, but the guy really... Now, he had four noble truths. And actually, the other three gave a lot of hope. He showed what the cause of our stress and suffering is, and then he showed what the... Literally, there are ways that we can find lasting peace. And they're all... The beauty of them all is that they're all available free of charge. And the nice thing is you don't have to become a Buddhist. You don't have to become anything. You don't have to pick up, you know, it's not a religion. You can stay whatever spiritual path you're in. These are just tools that you can use if you so choose. And that's what we're celebrating tonight with the refuges and the precepts. So some of the things that cause, just to go over them, that cause our stress and our suffering that the Buddha talked about in his Pali Canon. We associate, he said at first, with people that are trying to find their happiness by accumulating wealth primarily, status, people who are concerned entirely by accumulation, and people who are into finding only short-term happiness and don't care about anything else. So we surround ourselves, even if we didn't choose, where there's a lot of people just around us that are basically, what do we call, Bela Vaga, which is translated as unskillful, basically. And that doesn't mean that we've even sometimes even consciously made the choice. It takes a lot of conscious choice to seek out on a night like tonight, when there's so much of an opportunity to be around, you know, much more distracting events. It takes a lot of courage to come here and meditate and be around other people that are not drinking and not choosing intoxication and are not choosing to just spend their New Year's without thinking or looking at life in a deeper level. We also are unaware of how much stress we carry around physically all the time. We tend to live so much in our heads and in our thoughts and in our dramas and our stories and our to-do lists and the places we're going and the places we've been, that we don't notice how at work and how in our day-to-day lives we're just carrying around so much physical stress, that because we're so unaware of the body at times, that and so living in our heads, that the body becomes this repository of all these repressed angers, these resentments, these things we don't want to face, and we don't notice just how much we're carrying around with us, how much physical stress. There's our habits. We can accumulate distracting habits that give us momentary sense of fleeting security and pleasure, from spending money to heedlessly, to eating heedlessly, to spending hours on Facebook, which is one of the most addictive things I think yet that we've come up with. There's gambling all the way through any kind of thing that we use to artificially turn off the stress in an unskillful way. I say unskillful way because a lot of the distractions we have, the spending money on things we don't need or whatever, for a little while they do make us feel like we're more powerful, like we really have got shit under control, like we don't feel that lack in our lives, that lack of purpose. So for a while, when we buy something new or when we give in to whatever cravings we have, there's a tendency for all those stresses that we haven't examined to go away. And then there's, of course, blaming the world for whenever we feel like we're hurt or angry, or we go through the human condition. We are so overbalanced by what's going on outside of us and so unaware of what's going on inside of us that we naturally, when good things happen, when we feel good, we tend to say, well, the entire reason I feel great is because things went easy at work, or because I'm at the beach, or because it's summer or whatever. But if we're feeling uncomfortable, it's got to be because, oh, that roommate of mine, or that person I'm in the relationship with, or those people there, or whatever. So there's this tendency to blame all the wrong things. So, and of course, there's the obsessive thought. We're so used to looking for a meaning for everything from our thinking. That little underlying, it's sort of like in the advertisements, there's a picture and you don't really know what it's selling until you see the words. That's what our thoughts do for us. They're the things that we turn to make sense of everything. So these are some of the ways we create so much suffering for ourselves in the course of our lives. And the Buddha offered us tools, as did other spiritual teachers as well, that help us not create as much stress and suffering, as much depression or obsessiveness. Some of the tools are surrounding ourselves occasionally with other people who are trying to find peace, not through accumulation, but also by balancing accumulation with finding peace within, by developing a meditation practice, by developing virtue through generosity and being of service and being considerate and being people who are not just trying to get ahead in the world. Now, none of this says it's the Buddha taught what's known as the middle path. For renunciates, for monks, it's a much higher standard. But for us, the middle path means balancing our desires to create and be successful and to have a lot of friends and to enjoy our youth and whatever else. There's nothing wrong with that, but it's so important to also balance it with something that will give us lasting security all the time. That's unconditional. So that eventually, should we find ourselves without jobs or careers, should we find ourselves without a relationship, or should we find ourselves suddenly without financial security, we still will have a source of peace and serenity that's there. So we're not throwing all of our eggs into one basket. So none of this is about totally... We are lay practitioners. None of us are about to, right now, tonight, unless you, there's something I don't know, about to cast aside all worldly possessions and go into Wat Metta. Most of us are going to go home to our beds and wake up the next day, and we're going to have our lives. So this is about this ceremony that is going to happen later, and about what Dharmapunks is all about. It's just about rebalancing so that we're not only trying to get our happiness from other people from the internet or from jobs or careers or from relationships, but we're also trying to get some of that sense of security from within. Some of the tools are, of course, meditation, from which we use the breath to attain a sense of peace for the mind and for the body that is utterly free of charge and utterly without any side effects whatsoever. And it's always available. There's also relaxing the body, finding where you carry your stress, and using the mind to simply relax those areas so that when we are caught in our obsessions, that rather than just listen to them, we can find where the stress in the body is when we're angry or when we're frightened or when we're despairing or when we're frustrated. And if we relax the body, we're much less driven by the thoughts. There's the three G's of generosity, goodwill and gratitude, which are always available. They're basically thoughts that if we find our mind just cranking away and we need to think something that's not going to cause us lasting stress, those are always available. There's the practice of equanimity and so many tools. I'm not going to get into them now. The Buddha left tools after tools after tools, and I've never in 6 years of teaching here had to give the same talk twice. Because I have just so many, by just listening and studying the Buddha and by studying with so many monks, I have at my disposal so much to share, and you will too. So there are solutions. So the question would be then, why do we choose at times the unskillful over things that will bring us lasting peace? And the answer is that all of the things that the tools that the Buddha taught, all the tools of any spiritual practice, whether they're doing service, helping someone out, developing gratitude, cultivating meditation or body scans or just inventorying our thoughts, all these things don't work immediately. They take time. All the unskillful things in life, though, work immediately. If you grab a crack pipe tonight, I guarantee you, it will work fucking immediately. It really fucking will. I guarantee you, it's an instant blast out of whatever you are thinking or shooting ourselves up, immediately spending money on something that we can't afford. All these things work really quickly. The problem is they don't last for a fuck of a long time. And then when they go away, you got to get more. And then you got to get more. And then you got to find more. And then what's happening is we're spending all of our time trying to get the thing that will only last for 10 minutes, a feel-good time. We're trying to figure out how we can get the money to buy more or whatever. Whereas all these tools, the skillful tools, when we really put time into them, they do last. They really do. The amount of time that I have spent in meditation is multiplied many times by peace in my life. The amount of times that when I walk around through life, make sure that I'm not physically stressed and relax the body, that pays off dividends far and wide. And after a while, there's so little effort that it requires. At first, it requires some effort, but after a while, the effort becomes easier and easier and easier. So the reason we choose the unskillful over the skillful is simply because of patience. So part of what we're doing tonight is celebrating the patience that goes into a spiritual practice and the tools that we have available at our disposal. So I'm just going to talk about, at first, the three refuges very briefly. The three refuges are what's going to be the first part. And when we're really freaked out in life, when we really feel unsafe, there are traditionally in Buddhism three refuges or three sources of feeling secure that we can turn to. The first is refuge in the Buddha, which doesn't mean the Buddha that lived 2,500 years ago. The Buddha's not a god. He died. He's dead. He's gone. It's actually seeking refuge in the idea that there's inner peace available within. That we can really, just like the Buddha, find inner peace. The Buddha didn't have any money. He didn't have any things. He was alone in a forest when he uncovered the power of meditation. So you don't need anything. And that's what we're celebrating when we talk about refuge in the Buddha. We're seeking refuge in the idea that anybody, any human being, by practicing, can find peace in their own minds. It doesn't come easily, but it does come. And I've never met somebody who's put the effort in who over time doesn't find the peace that will eventually come. It's just a matter of effort. And so that's what we're celebrating when we say we can seek refuge in the example of the Buddha. It's not, you don't have to believe the Buddha exists. In fact, you're welcome to not believe that the Buddha exists. I really don't care. No Buddhist will really care. It doesn't matter. You don't have to believe in any of the stories about the Buddha. The only thing you have to at least open up to the possibility is that there is some peace within you somewhere. And that if you work to find it, you will find it. The second is seeking refuge in the Dhamma, which really means that there are tools available. We don't have to reinvent the wheel. We don't have to uncover by ourselves. We're welcome to try, but there are available to us endless tools that we can use and practice. The Buddha, for example, had a list of 5 ways to get rid of obsessive thinking. Isn't that nice to know? I've used all of them and they work, and I'm really fucking glad I didn't have to figure them out on my own, because I wouldn't be here all peaceful if I did. So there are tools, and they're not just linked and locked up in Buddhism. There are lots of spiritual practices out there. Whatever spiritual practice you choose, whether it's a religion or another thing like a 12-step program, just use taking refuge in the Dhamma as a expressing gratitude and reminding yourself that there are spiritual tools available to you to find peace. And finally, they're seeking refuge in the Sangha, which is us. We're not alone. The mind might tell us that we're alone, might try to make us believe that there's nobody else who's ever experienced what we've experienced, that there's no one else who can possibly know what we're going through. But if we really open up our hearts to people who are here, to people who are trying to live in a different way than most people, that we actually will be able to share and find a safe place to find support. So those are what the refuges are about. And that's what will the first part of the ceremony will be. Now, if you don't want to, by the way, take part in the ceremony, you don't have to. We just simply run a string, and everybody who wants to holds the string, and then we chant the words, and then the string is cut. And then you get to wear the string around your wrist like a reminding necklace until it breaks. But it doesn't mean that you become a Buddhist. You can say that you become a Buddhist if you want. You don't have to. All it really means is that you're trying to set an intention. And this is a good time of year to set an intention. I have to say that tomorrow morning when the sun comes up, it's not going to say 2011 on the sun. There's not going to be any chipmunks saying Happy New Year to you. The only people who know, in fact, that it's 2011 tomorrow are the human beings. It's a totally a human being idea. It's a convention. So we might as well use it skillfully by setting intentions. I gave a talk on Tuesday about setting intentions, and I do have to say, if you do set them, really keep them a day at a time. Don't try to do anything for a year. It could be, don't even try to breathe for a year. You'll find it impossible. Anytime you carry around the thought, I've got to do this for a fucking year, you're not going to fucking do it. It could be to go to the bathroom. You'll like find a way not to if you tell yourself, I've got to do this for this entire 2011. Fuck it. I might as well give up now. I just can't do it. So keep all the intentions very light, very manageable for a day at a time. If they're important, you can do them. You can take an intention each morning. But don't try to do anything for the rest of your life. So the other part of the precepts where we just refrain from killing, stealing, lying, causing harm through sexual misconduct, you can have sex, it just means not trying to harm somebody or lie through it. And finally, causing harm through intoxication, which on this night means, I think, more than any of the other precepts. The point of the precepts is that if we try to develop a meditation practice and learn about Buddhism, but still in the rest of our lives, we're acting unskillfully, we're undermining all of our efforts. Because if we're lying, we have to keep track of so many stories. Or if we're killing, or if we're stealing, we have to keep track of so many other narratives, it becomes impossible to really see how we're causing ourselves stress and how we're bringing ourselves peace. So in order to really gain any knowledge or wisdom, these are the five foundations: refraining from killing, stealing, harmful speech, harmful sex, intoxication. Now, if you're not sober and you can drink responsibly without causing damage in your life, tell me how to do it. No. No, if it was possible, I would have figured it out by now. Believe me. I tried every fucking method. This is simply refraining from causing harm through intoxication. I don't want anybody who alcohol doesn't cause unskillfulness to think that they have to give up something that they're not prepared for. If you are sober, then this is a great chance to renew for another day that vow. And to also take a sense of appreciation that on a night like tonight, we've chosen to be here instead of somewhere else. There's a story in the Pali Canon where the Buddha talked about the great virtue of a monk who's sitting on a hill meditating alone. And in the background, he hears this party where everybody's drunk and screaming and dancing and carrying on. And he said, well, for that little period of time where he feels like a little bit envious of all the people that are cavorting and acting crazy, there's a sense of envy he might have. But then for the days following, the monk feels great, feels a lift of self-esteem and feels a sense that he's accomplished something. He's gained wisdom. Whereas the people who got drunk, and boy, in the Buddhist time, they could fucking throw a party. They would last for days. There'd be animal sacrifices. And there's lots and lots of pot smokers during the Buddha. There's one of his famous sermons was to thousands of people who were high off, or weren't high, but were used to be people who got high. And so, you know, they knew how to throw a party. But they weren't the ones who, in the long term, felt good about the efforts they put in. So that's pretty much what tonight is about. It's about reminding ourselves that there are alternative ways to seek happiness and security in this life, and that there are tools at our disposal to do so. So we still have about a half an hour for anyone to share about what it means to be here or anything that happens during your meditation, or anything that you'd like to talk about. I will only answer if you have a question, but I'd like this more to be like a time for you guys to share about what your spiritual practice and being here on New Year's Eve means, and any experience that happened during the long meditation beforehand. So thank you for listening, and in a half an hour we'll have the ceremony. So now it's your turn. Hey, G.
How you doing? My name is G. Something happened today. I start long mornings pretty much for the last few months trying to meditate for like a half hour. Sometimes I'll cut it back to 10 minutes or 15 minutes, right?